Chapter 3, Key West. Mom packed sandwiches, a thermos of orange juice, and some paper cups in a sack. "In case you or Sharky gets hungry on the way," she said. Sharky told Dad that he'd meet me at the train station Friday morning, where we'd catch the 8 o'clock train to Key West. I was excited, but uneasy. Sharky was the grumpiest and most unfriendly person I'd ever met. At the station, Sharky was leaning on his cane and waiting with a knapsack and a huge wheelbarrow full of dried alligator hides. He wore a short-sleeved plaid shirt, tan pants, and a straw hat that tied under his chin. "About time," he hollered when he saw me. "We need to get these hides on board, and we'll take the wheelbarrow, too. It'll be handy for stuff I might buy." When the train chugged into the station, we heaved the hides and the barrow into the freight car and then took seats in the smoking car. By the time we boarded, the car was almost full with loud veterans from the highway project. Friday meant payday, and this group was on its way to Key West for a good time, as my dad would say. I held the lunch in my lap. "Want a drink?" I asked Sharky over the din. "Not right now." The seat in front of us was empty, so Sharky reversed it, shoved his knapsack under it, then put his bad leg up on the seat. "Might as well get comfortable. It's a long ride from Isla Mirada. About 80 miles, I'd say." "If we go 60 miles an hour, we should be there in an hour and a half or so," I said. "That's not too long." As soon as the train started, it seemed as if everyone in the car lit up a cigarette. The man across the aisle from us was chomping on a cigar. "I'm going to the other car," I told Sharky. "The smoke is making me sick." "Sit down. Don't be a sissy." "You don't want me to throw up, do you?" I asked sharply. Sharky shrugged. "Oh, go ahead," he answered crustily. He lay back and pulled his head over his face. "Wake me when we get there." I took the bag of sandwiches and stepped out onto the platform between the cars. I stayed outside, breathing in the salty air. The Flagler Railway from Miami to Key West was called the Eighth Wonder of the World. No one had thought an ocean railway could ever be built, but Mr. Flagler made it happen. I was beginning to feel better and was enjoying the ride when the door to the car opened and Sharky came out in a cloud of blue smoke carrying his knapsack. "I thought you were sleeping," I said. He stood next to me, squinting out at the view. "Couldn't sleep. My leg's bothering me." "How did you hurt it, anyway? Dad said it happened in the war." "That's right. After the railroad was finished and the Great War began, I joined the army. Some German Jerry got a good shot over in France. The bullet went into the bone. I was in the hospital for months and couldn't wait to get back to the Keys. My old boxcar never looked so good as the day I came home, but the legs bothered me ever since." We stayed on the platform between cars, listening to the clicking of the wheels and watching the dark blue Atlantic on the left and the turquoise Florida Bay on the right as we moved from one key to another. My town of Isla Mirada is on upper Metacumbe Key, about halfway down to Key West. Now we were dashing over the lower keys, all of them like jewels on the sea. When we crossed the 7 mile bridge, I held my breath. I'd crossed the bridge several times, but each time it was as if the sky and sea melded together and the whole world was shining blue. I was sure that nowhere on earth was there such a miracle as the 7-mile-long bridge that Mr. Flagler had built right out on the sea and which seemed to be disconnected to the rest of the earth. After a while, we went into the forward car and ate our lunch. Sharky took a bite of the thick sandwich and spilled some on his shirt. "Egg salad," he muttered. "Too messy." Sharky had some nerve to complain about Mom's sandwiches. "Better than nothing," I answered brusquely. "Yep, a whole lot better than nothing," Sharky agreed. Key West was a busy, bustling port filled with ships flying the American flag at the top of their masts and the flags of other nations beneath it. Catches from fishing vessels were being unloaded, and the smell of fish filled the air. In another area of the port, fancy white yachts were hitched to docks while their well-dressed passengers and crew meandered through the town. Sharky and I pushed the wheelbarrow full of hides to a place where people were trading and exchanging goods. "Hey, Sharky!" folks yelled as we passed by, and Sharky nodded or gave a small salute. I was surprised to see how well known he was here in Key West. We stopped at a booth where Sharky emptied a bag of wooden figurines he had in his backpack onto the table. "Carved them myself," I heard him say. "Good for souvenirs." They were amazingly good. Some were of gators, some of fish, and there was a real pretty one of a leaping dolphin. The man at that booth handed Sharky a wad of bills and took the entire batch. I was impressed that Sharky, a hunter and fisherman, was also a talented artist. He sure was popular around here, and folks around Key West seemed to respect him. The kids back home looked at Sharky in a different way, a fearful run-when-you-see-him kind of way. Of course, he did catch the Ashburn boys spying on him, so I guess you couldn't blame Sharky for being crabby. The Isla Mirada kids often spied on him or sneaked around his property. At a large tent, a man came out and talked with Sharky. Then he looked over the pile of hides, carefully examining each one. While the two men argued about prices and quality, I meandered around the area, checking out souvenirs, fishing gear, and leather wallets and belts. Soon, Sharky caught up with me. He set the empty wheelbarrow down and stuffed another wad of bills in his pocket. "I'm all set." He seemed satisfied. "Let's take a look at the auctions." Sharky explained that the auctions were sales of overstocked or damaged goods that wreckers had salvaged from shipwrecks and brought to Key West to sell. We passed by places where folks had gathered in small groups to bid on everything from bolts of cloth to Kapok life jackets that had been pulled from sunk or sinking ships. Then I noticed a crowd of people looking over a mule that was tied to a nearby post. "You'll be surprised to see how much pack this here little mule can carry," a man crowed. He appeared to be the owner. "She can pull a wagon as well as any horse. She's strong and good-mannered." "She's a mule, Frank," someone snorted. "They don't have good manners." "They're not sissified fancy horses," Frank snapped back. "They're workers, and they don't have time to prance around." The pretty brown and white spotted mule stood quietly, her tail switching at flies. As Sharky limped over to get a better look, I swear she blinked her eyelashes at him. "Will she take a saddle?" Sharky asked as he ran his fingers through the animal's thick coat. "Why, sure she will. I'll even throw her saddle in with the sail." The man eyed Sharky's limp. "Someone like you could use a good working animal like this. You can ride her or hitch her up to a cart and she'll pull you around nice as pie." The mule moved closer to Sharky and leaned against him. I was getting nervous. I'd heard how mules could kick in any direction at a moment's notice. This mule seemed calm enough, though. In fact, now she was leaning her head on Sharky's shoulder and nuzzling his neck. "How old is she?" Sharky asked, rubbing the soft spot between her ears. 15 or so. Used to work for the railroad." "She's older than 15 if she worked for the railroad," Sharky scoffed. "Will she lift her legs for shoeing?" "Course." Frank must have thought Sharky was a good prospect as he stopped speaking to the rest of the crowd and gave Sharky his full attention. "Her name's Jewel," he said. "I love her like a child. I swear she's a sweetheart, but I can't keep her anymore." "Why not?" Sharky asked. "Cost too much to feed her." Frank stopped short when he realized his mistake. "Actually, she doesn't eat a lot," he backtracked. "A bag or two of oats every day. She works hard, and she's worth her keep." "But you can't afford her," Sharky retorted with a hard look at the man. Frank stammered. "I'm retiring. Don't need a mule anymore." "How much do you want for?" The owner's eyes widened. "She's a bargain at $500. Sharky hobbled away without another word. I headed after him. You can have her for $350, Frank called out. Let's go, Sharky said to me, limping at his top speed. You don't really want the mule, do you? I asked breathlessly, hurrying to catch up while steering the clumsy wheelbarrow. Nah, I don't want her, he answered over his shoulder. 300, Frank yelled. We kept walking. Suddenly, Frank cried out in a loud, sad voice. Since no one wants to buy Jewel, I'll have to get rid of her. My poor, sweet mule will have to be put down. Sharky stopped dead in his tracks, and I stumbled into him, nearly knocking him over with the wheelbarrow. He pushed me aside and swung around. $100, he bellowed, waving his cane. Sold, Frank sang out. You just bought yourself a mule.